Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome to The Interview. My name is Andrew Damelin. Today's guest is a proud St. Francis Knight and combo guard for the Raptors 905. His name is Kobe Simmons. Kobe, thanks for doing this.
No problem. I'm excited to be here.
All right, so the first question I always like to ask, growing up in Alpharetta, Georgia, What is your first vivid basketball memory?
So I grew up in Atlanta, and I went to high school in Alpharetta, So I think a basketball memory was kind of seeing the older guys ahead of me playing when I was younger. The Lorenzo Browns, you know, Lou Wills from there. Players like that, just being very young and going with my family members and going to watch them play. Georgia basketball is very exciting. So, like, I think I was in a great state to watch a lot of hoops.
And you played with Malik Beasley. You played with NBA talent growing up. And I'm wondering, you know, as a kid, and I do apologize, you were born in Alpharetta. Were you born in Alpharetta? That's what your real GM
Atlanta.
Page.
You're
born in Atlanta. Yeah. So your real GM page is what led me astray.
Yeah, I went to St. Francis in Alpharetta.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like where my name got founded. So everybody just know me being from Alpharetta. So I'll accept that as well, though.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll accept that as well.
So Kobe Jordan Simmons, that's your name, by the way. So you're growing up in Atlanta. And what I noticed in your game is my nickname for you is Eurostep. You're always setting up guys with the Eurostep, manipulating your defender, setting guys up. Right. At what age, how young were you when you started manipulating your opponent rather than just using your own ability?
I would say when my dad really started training me. So I think it was maybe around middle school, sixth grade, somewhere around there where I really started. I was okay in elementary. I was good. But then, like, sixth grade, middle school, as I got a little older going into high school, is when we really started implementing drill work. And we would do series called the Gauntlet and things like that. And it was just a lot of combo finishes, different moves. Like, it was kind of like weird kind of movements that actually, like, you could submit to the game. So implement to the game. So it was actually cool. And all the you saw the defensive like that in the game. So I was always reacting off instinct. And I already had that in my bag from when I worked out with my dad. So it was good.
And you mentioned the grade six is when you started working on this type of stuff. Mm-hmm. Grade seven is when you enter St. Francis, or it's when
I went to St. Francis in eighth grade.
But Coach Drew Catlett is his name.
Exactly.
He says he talked to you in grade seven.
Yeah.
This is what he said at your
So hey, Drew Catlett, he talked to me when I was younger because my brother ended up going there in high school. So my brother transferred there in 10th grade. Drew Catlett was the assistant coach at the time, and I was just a wild young kid just running around the gym. And that's when I first got introduced to Catlett, and Coach Huff was the coach at the time. He was the head coach who's now coaching in college. That's when I first met Coach Catlett.
So what Coach Catlett said at your jersey retirement ceremony is that he asked you if you were any good in grade seven, and you said, I'm going to be the best player.
Yeah, I know.
You said, I'm going to be the best player on your team, and I'm going to make the NBA.
Right.
Where did that confidence come from?
I think I always – so my family were always athletic. They played basketball. And seeing them, you know, trash talk, play against each other in the driveway, go to their – seeing them play, like, at their games and stuff like that, that just gave me the ultimate confidence. Like, our family was always competitive. So we always – I'm better than you. We go to the front yard right now and play. So I kind of just – like, being around them and my brothers, I kind of just grew up with that confidence. And just, like, the sky's the limit. Everything is possible. I believe in my dreams, and I just go after them.
And playing with Malik Beasley, was feeding off each other, playing against each other in practice. What was that like, being with someone who's really your equal at that level?
Yep.
And not many others are your equal at that level. Playing him against him every day.
Yeah.
How'd that feed into the confidence and everything?
MB5 has an amazing story. You know, I talked to him about it. His story is just great. I don't know a lot of people know it. Me and B started playing with each other, along with Kaiser Gates, who plays on Long Island right now. In sixth grade, We met around fourth, fifth grade, and we started playing together at AAU in like sixth grade. And Malik was he was kind of like, I want to say now, when back then when he was younger, he wasn't the player he is now. And he was kind of just a blend in kind of player, and until it hit around ninth grade summer, coming into 10th grade, and he skyrocketed. And it was crazy for us to see, because we never, like, his growth happened so fast. And after that 9th, 10th grade year, he went into junior year, and he started winning Georgia Player of the Year and Metro Atlanta Player of the Year and all his accolades. And senior year, he kind of took off. I think he was Kaiser was the leaders of our team there last year. So, like, just seeing his growth, and obviously went to Florida State, continued to work, had a great mindset, believed in his dreams. And I remember watching Beast play. We would go over his house. Before we used to go over his house, we would just always play, always, you know what I'm saying, hang out, talk, kick it. And then I, when I was going over there in 10th, 11th grade, and I was walking his room, and I started seeing protein shake bottles, and I started seeing meal preps in the fridge. I'm like, yo, like, and I saw him. He will work out 6 a.m. before school. Then he'll go get shots. Then he'll go to class. Then he'll go to school. Then we'll have practice after class, and then he'll go back and do shots again and work out. Then, like, just his mindset through, I want everybody to know, through 10th grade, going up to like his senior year, going into college, that's what made him ready for the NBA, and I couldn't be more proud of him.
It looks like it rubbed off on you,
yeah.
In a way, because I see these Ball Is Life 2 minutes snap ups. Guys, it's highlights of you guys going back and forth. I think you have like 8 Rondo ball fakes in one single highlight.
They said that was one of my sigs in high school, one of my signatures. I just always got everybody with that.
And you move on to Arizona. You spend a year at Arizona.
Right.
You go undrafted, yep. But you latch on with the Grizzlies. Mm-hmm. You make your debut that season. And one famous Grizzly who was still with Memphis at the time that Raptors fans know and love, mm-hmm. Marc Gasol, was there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one play I see you run with him. You're running a pistol action with him, yep. I believe. I'm not the X's and O's expert, but I think that was a pistol action.
Yep.
What's it like? You know, you're playing with – you're talking about teammates that you've admired, like Malik Beasley.
Mm-hmm.
Playing with a guy like Marc Gasol,
yeah,
what was that like?
It was crazy, because I think I started around almost 20 games in Memphis. And, man, it's just crazy to see, like, the knowledge that they have of the game. And I'm coming in as a 19-year-old kind of just like, oh, like, I'm just going to go out here and shoot. No, it's not that. So I learned so much, especially in the summertime coming up. Like, I worked out maybe like 3-4 days a week with Mike Conley. So that was my vet. That's who I learned from. Mike, unfortunately, got hurt maybe like a month into the season, but like just through that year, just talking to me, speaking to me, and that's where I started to kind of learn the ropes of the game as a professional. And it was a lot that, like, rather than just coming in 30 minutes early, now it's like, no, like, especially as a rookie, be here 2 hours early, get treatment, eat properly. Like, a lot of things like that is when it got implemented to my mind, and then, like, throughout my career, that's when it started to click. And when you look back, you're always like, man, like, they were really telling me, like, honest things. Like, so – just playing with guys like Mike, Mark, players like that on that team, it was great to learn from.
You make your debut November 29th, 2017. Do you remember Tyreke Evans'
pass assist to me?
So yeah. Take us through that play. What did that mean for you in that moment? You're going up for that shot, and it's your first NBA bucket.
Man, you know, so I had no expectations going into that game. I kind of was just – I get out here, play hard, defense, run the lane, run the floor. I was out there with another guard, which was Tyreke, and kind of like played good defense, got that possession, got a stop, and ran the right side of the lane. And he found me with a late drop off. He euroed late drop off, and I had a left-handed scoop on the right side. And I remember after the game, he was just like, hey, Rook, I want you to remember, like, I got you your first NBA bucket. So I couldn't been more grateful for that opportunity. And I mean, that situation, that bucket, and I was waiting for that, like, all my life.
One other play from your rookie season that I wanted to go over, and I wonder if you probably don't remember the date of it. The date was December 30th, 2017. It was against the Warriors in Golden State.
Mm-hmm.
You know what play I'm talking about right away?
Swaggy P.
Swaggy.
Yeah. I have a great memory. Like, I remember so much from all the way back to middle school, high school. Like, even my – every year I play, every play, like, I watch a lot of film. I watch so much, even, like, a lot of the plays I miss. Not just highlights, but film of, like, games and things like that. So, I definitely remember that. That was before you even say it, it was a heat check for sure. I hit 2 threes before that, and I was feeling it. And JB Bickerstaff looked at me and was like, keep going. He was not taking me out, keep going. And that just gave me, you hearing that as an NBA coach, as an NBA player, that, as a 19, 20-year-old, I had the ultimate confidence at that point. So my game started to kind of like ooze out a little bit.
So on that play, speaking of setting guys up, I mean, you hit him with this crossover.
Yeah.
At what? So just in your, I want to take you through the player's mindset, right?
Yeah,
because
yeah, yeah,
you're setting guys up all mm-hmm. the time. You're in heat check mode at this point.
Yeah.
But usually a heat check mode is like, I'm going to take a bad shot.
Yeah.
But you set up Nick mm-hmm. Young with this crossover at the right wing area. Do you remember sort of going for that
I
setup,
remember,
how to manipulate him?
I remember I was coming out of the corner. I had a pitch action to the corner, and a screen was coming to get set to me, and Golden State at the time was trying to down it. So I was quick. And Nick was already a step behind, so I'm like, okay, if I beat the down, and a player usually messes up the coverage on defense, they try their hardest to square the ball back up and not mess up on film or get, put their team in a position that they didn't practice. So I kind of beat the screen over the top, got a little bump, took another dribble, and I just saw him kind of turn his whole body and was trying to beat, like, play the angle game and try to beat me to an angle, and I kind of just snatched back. And it was, you could just tell already, I was already knew I was shooting it. It was just, I had too much confidence rolling at the time.
This is the thinking of the game that I love, that is so interesting
to
me. In that fast moment, you can see each bit.
For sure.
Play, step by step, play by play. So, yeah, so you really, by all accounts, you have a successful first season in Memphis. Play 32 games,
right,
I believe. And, you know, we go along this journey.
Mm-hmm.
You spend a couple seasons in the Charlotte system.
Exactly.
And then 2021, you head off to Poland.
Right.
Talked to a lot of guys who've played internationally, and I always wonder, there's certain times where they're on a bus in a remote village in whatever parts of Eastern Europe.
Yep.
Do you ever sit, look outside, and think to yourself, what am I doing here?
So I kind of always give myself a positive mindset and an outlook on life. And it would definitely be times where I'm looking out like my family's back home asleep. With our time zone, I'm up. No one to really communicate with. It kind of just makes you think about, like, overall about, like, life in general and where, like, my career could end up and where, like, I want it to go. Me heading to overseas was kind of a weird situation because it was just after COVID. I was in the Charlotte organization, but then it was kind of like, we don't know what moves are going to be made. We don't know what's happening coming out of the season. So it was a weird year. So I decided that's why I decided to kind of go overseas that year and kind of see what it was like. And then ultimately, like, goal was what I did was make my way back. So
you make your way back, still successful in the Charlotte Greensboro organization, and you sign a multi-year contract in April of 2023. Yeah. And eventually that contract gets waived a few months later. So this is now 6 years at that at that point into this journey. You mentioned this positive mindset.
Yeah.
And your Twitter feed is just littered with positivity, preaching patience, preaching, you know, knowing what your worth is. And there's one tweet that's I'm sure you're
the
familiar with.
Bottle.
Yeah, that got the most traction. I'll just read it for our audience who might not be familiar. Is a bottle of water can be 50 cents at a supermarket, $2 at a gym, $3 at the movies, and $6 on a plane. Same water. Only thing that changed is its value. Mm. And its value was the place. So the next time you feel your worth is nothing, maybe you're at the wrong place.
Right.
So a beautiful, absolutely beautiful message.
Yes.
And I'm wondering, with all these Twitter messages that you send out to your followers, how much of it is for your followers and how much of it is it for you to remind yourself?
I think it's both. I think it's definitely both. So I went through a transition my first couple years and I was kind of like battling with my own emotions. And I needed to find faith. I needed to find something to believe in. And I was just internally always like fighting with myself. And it was kind of just felt like an emotional roller coaster. I was always riding on the highs. I was always low with the lows. I was never kind of stoic. I was never solid. And at the time, like coming into that transition is when I found God and I started to believe in God. So I think that kind of helped me to settle down and put all my faith into Him and trust His plan. And that's kind of like where I started to kind of like find myself more. And those tweets that go out, that's really speaking from like what I feel. And it's speaking that a lot of people want to say or want to get out into the world. And I kind of have a good platform to put it out there. So it relates to everybody, honestly.
No, and they're so beautiful. Just to scroll through, they're just nice. You know, pick me up type of messages. It really does. It speaks to me for sure. And I'm not a religious guy.
Yeah.
Sometimes I wish I was, because it's a guiding light, you know, that you can actually continue to go for. But that might be a conversation.
Just being a big religion guy, a Christian, it kind of just helped me stay very like sane and kind of just like don't ride the highs, don't ride the lows, and kind of put all my faith in one basket, which is my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. So I kind of just I ride that. I read. I just found so much peace just putting everything and not riding onto my own beliefs or what I believe in or what I think. And I don't think twice about anything. If things happen bad and I feel like God didn't send that, it wasn't for me. If things happen good, I'm blessed because I was obedient to God. So it's kind of like that's kind of how I ride it. So it just helped me stay in that positive mindset. And it's been great for me in my journey with him so far.
And you go along the journey and you're with the Raptors 905 for the season. And your role sort of changes in and out, guys coming up and down, as you might expect, guys getting their NBA shot.
Yeah.
While you continue to put up numbers, what have been the biggest benefits being here with the Raptors 905 and what's been, in some cases, a difficult season?
Yeah, no. I look at everything as a positive. I think my ability to grow here. So my past experience is playing in the G League. I've always been like one of the top guys on the team. I've always been the guys who's scoring 17, 18, 19 points a night and kind of just being like the other team's main focus as like this is a three-level scorer. He can come in, he can do this, he can facilitate, he can rebound, he can do a little bit of everything. So coming to a team like this, I think my first year here with a lot of talent, with Marquise, with Javon, with Jonte coming down, with Justice here, with guys like Moji, just the whole roster just forming. And playing with guys beside me it gives me the ability to showcase my overall game and not just, him being a scorer or him doing this. Like, no, I don't have to score 20, 25 points here every night to show that I'm supposed to be in the NBA. Like, no, I can show that. Listen, I'm playing with Justice Winslow, NBA guy. I'm playing with Moji two-way. I'm playing with Marquise two-way. I'm playing with Javon, just got signed. I'm playing with guys that are actually really, really good. You know what I'm saying? I'm playing with guys that are really, really, really good. So I think that just shows, like, the ability to showcase my full game and that I can play with guys and NBA teams see that. And like, I'm a plug and play kind of guy. I can plug in and play with your guys. I'm not here to step on anybody's toes. I'm here to just elevate a team, bring my defensive mindset and make plays happen.
That's an incredible attitude to have. That's what I noticed too on the court is the stoic attitude. Yeah. Had I not known anything previous to that, it seems like you just go in with that stoic attitude. That's how you've played throughout the year. You do mix in some athleticism in there as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Everyone should check out when you crowned Alex Antetokounmpo. That was.
Yeah, the team makes a lot of jokes about like my mindset when I'm on the court. Like I don't know if a lot of people can see. I'm very I'm reading and reacting a lot, but I'm very calm. I barely make any reactions, facial expressions about anything. Like whether I make a great play, my facial expressions are the same. Whether I make a bad play, you wouldn't think any different. Like you don't know how the game's going by looking at me. And I used to just ride off those emotions a lot, yelling, now I'm down, but now I just keep it very stoic. So you'll see a big play, me dunking. If you go look back at that highlight, I probably didn't really make a facial expression. Any putbacks, any lobs, like I kind of just keep the same face. And the team and the staff makes jokes about that all the time. Like he just did this crazy play and didn't even flinch. Like he didn't make a – so like that's just kind of like how my game is evolving, and it just keeps me calm.
For me, that's what I love too. Tim Duncan, never outwardly emotional. I love that. That's the stuff that I'm actually drawn to as well. It's a great game to watch aesthetically and how you carry yourself. Mm-hmm. And listen, Kobe, I really appreciate the time today. I wish you the best of luck for the rest of the season and wherever your career will take you.
I appreciate that. Thank you for having me.